Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Join us for an in-depth look at Iowa agriculture. Here's your host, Mark Magnuson.
Hello and welcome to Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. In today's episode, Riley Smith will speak with BEX agronomist Nate Meyer. Dustin Huffman visits with Mac Marshall of the United Soybean Board at Washington Watch in D.C. And Russ Parker provides his faith-based segment. This segment is brought to you by BEX. Since 1937, BEX has stood up for the things that matter most: faith, independence, and helping farmers succeed. On Tuesday, President Biden announced a surge of increased tariffs on imported Chinese products. The tariff hikes will be applied to $18 billion worth of imports from China, including electrical vehicle batteries and computer chips. How will China respond to President Biden's increased tariffs on imported Chinese goods? United States Senator Chuck Grassley says it is difficult to predict what China might do in response.
But there is a pattern that's set when Trump put tariffs on that weren't as broad as what Biden has done this year to China. We saw retaliation against agricultural products, and then that hit American farmers.
Grassley says the Trump administration used CCC funds to help offset losses to American farmers, a strategy he disagrees with.
Trump takes $28 billion out of there and distributes among farmers, presumably to offset the damage done by China's retaliation. So I think we have to assume that there's going to be retaliation.
Although he doesn't know what China's response will be, Grassley says he thinks that United States agricultural exports could be a target of retaliation for the Chinese government.
Since we're so dependent upon exports of our agricultural products, because we produce a third more and we're dependent on exports, China knows that's our weak spot. And I'm not sure whether that's where he would retaliate.
This week, Bayer Crop Science announced a new breakthrough in the battle against tar spot. Bayer researchers have developed a method to artificially inoculate tar spot in Bayer field test plots. DeKalb technical agronomist Jim Donnelly says that because tar spot is still relatively new to the United States, it has been difficult to learn as much about the disease as some other common threats.
With this one, it's been different. It's been a brand new disease. It's been a little bit more finicky. There's been a little bit of a learning curve into how we figure out how to get that inoculum out there and how to get disease in our plots. And we've kind of figured that out.
One of the main aims of the Bayer team is to increase tar spot tolerance in its corn hybrids through precision breeding technology.
You know, at the end of the day, we want to make sure that we're delivering hybrids with pretty good tolerance, as good as we can. Not to say that we won't use it for evaluating fungicides, et cetera, but it's really about delivering the best products with the best tar spot tolerance. And the only way that we can really do that is put all of those hybrids in a test under disease pressure.
Senators Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst led the state's delegation in calling on USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack to swiftly approve Iowa's request for federal assistance. Governor Kim Reynolds and Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Nagy made the request on behalf of farmers who were hit by severe storms and tornadoes last month. Reynolds and Nagy are seeking immediate issuance of a USDA secretarial designation, authorizing the Farm Service Agency disaster programs, including the Farm Loans Program and the Emergency Assistance for Livestock Program. The USDA designation would assist farmers in 8 counties while recovering from April storms. We respectfully ask that you activate any and all eligible assistance for the affected 8 counties as a result of severe storms, including 24 tornadoes that impacted Iowa April 26th through the 27th, the letter says. A significant emergency response was needed as a result of these severe storms that damaged grain bins and farm equipment. The June 1st deadline for eligible Iowa farm owners to apply for Century or Heritage Farm recognition is quickly approaching. The Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship is encouraging farm families to apply today. The program, which was created in partnership by the department and the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation, honors families who have owned their farms for 100 years and 150 years, respectively. This is the 48th year of the Century Farm Program, which started in 1976 as part of the nation's bicentennial celebration. To date, more than 21,000 farms from across the state have received this distinction. It is the 18th year of the Heritage Farm Program, and more than 1,800 farms have been recognized since the program began in 2006. The completed applications must be postmarked or received by the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship by June 1, 2024, in order to be included in the August 15th ceremony, which is held during the 2024 Iowa State Fair. To apply, you can download and complete the application found on the department's website and then return it to the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship by June 1st. And the May World Ag Supply and Demand Estimates report included USDA's first assessment of domestic and international supply and demand prospects. The 2024-25 U.S. corn outlook calls for larger supplies, greater domestic use and exports, and higher ending stocks. The corn crop is projected at 14.9 billion bushels, which is down 3% from last year. The yield projection is 181 bushels per acre. Total corn supplies are forecast at 16.9 billion bushels. The season average farm price is down 25 cents to $4.40. The soybean outlook is for higher supplies, crush, exports, and ending stocks. The crop is projected at 4.45 billion bushels, ending stocks at 4.8 billion bushels, up by 8%. The season average price is forecast at $11.20 a bushel, down from $12.55 last year. The wheat forecast is 1.85 billion bushels, up 3% from 2023. Yield will be 48.9 bushels, season average price $6 per bushel. For more on these news stories, you can visit our website at iowaagnet.com. While you're there, don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter that delivers our five daily news stories to your inbox each day. You can find all of our video content on our YouTube channel. When you visit our page, make sure and click on the subscribe button, also the notification icon, which will let you know whenever we have any new videos to view. You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. That's all the time we have this week for news headlines. Let's turn it over now to Russ Parker for his faith-based segment here on Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Earlier this week, I spent an evening mowing a playground area near the church. Because of the rainy weather and schedules that were not dovetailing with the weather, the height of the grass got away from me. It got so bad that the kids couldn't even play in there, and it was described jokingly as an area where the wild animals could hide. I've learned over time that mowing the yard is one of those jobs that you just can't put off to another day. It leads to all kinds of self-abuse, like plugging the lawnmower, multiple starts, lifting the mower deck up and down, leaving rows of discharged grass, or raking and lawn sweeping, or even need to contact the farmer neighbor to come in and bale the yard. Well, the last one might be a stretch, but point made, putting off mowing can lead to self-inflicted mental and physical injury. In fact, if one thinks about it, putting off most anything can create all kinds of challenges, and I might be the world's worst culprit. For example, I didn't put away a particular tool, and now it's lost. I didn't take the garbage out, and the stink the next day reminded me. And I didn't inflate the trailer tire when I should have, and now it's flat. And I put off putting fuel in a car, and now the price is higher, and it goes on and on. And these are all minor examples of consequences when we decide to do something later that could be done in the present. But in life, there are more serious things that when we don't take an action, the long term can have significant impact. By subject, these would include finances, business and career, personal relationships. For example, not paying the balance on a credit card or putting off a job change, waiting till another day to say sorry, visiting a friend some other time, wishing an I love you had been said. But I say the most important thing to not delay is a spiritual connection. There will be another time. I just don't think I believe enough. Or right now, I'm just not good enough. Or what will the others say? Or I just don't want to get involved. Or my sin is unforgivable. Saying these things results in the grass growing higher and thicker. In Matthew, we read, "Come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. And take my yoke upon you and lean on me, for I am meek and lowly in heart. And you shall find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." Food for thought, I hope. This is Russ Parker. Have a blessed day.
Thanks, Russ. Up next, Riley Smith will visit with BEX agronomist Nate Meyer for segment number two of Weekend Ag Matters here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
There are so many decisions that go into being a successful soybean farmer. Plant date, row spacing, water management, crop rotation, soil temperature, cover crop, soil pH, nutrients, weather conditions. Whew! At least becoming a farmer member of the Iowa Soybean Association is one straightforward decision in your life. If you market at least 250 bushels of soybeans annually, ISA's farmer membership is available at no additional cost thanks to your soy checkoff investment. Just activate or confirm online and start reaping the benefits. It's a no-brainer. The Iowa Soybean Association proudly celebrates 60 years of moving our industry forward.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's Riley Smith.
We're on phone here with Nate Meyer. He is Southwest Iowa field agronomist with BEX Hybrids. Nate, thanks so much for taking the time to visit with us today. Delayed planting is very big on the minds of farmers right now as we've been dealing with a lot of moisture, excess moisture in that soil. What do you have from BEX Hybrids that's going to maybe help out the farmers with delayed planting strategies and what they need to be thinking about?
So BEX has done a lot of work over these past number of years working with their PFR studies, especially around delayed planting, anything of that nature. As we look at the different studies that we've done, so right now, the middle of May, people are starting to get nervous about being able to get their crops in a timely fashion. So we can look at some of the research we've done and see that, you know, May 15th, you're still looking at about getting 90 to 95% of your potential yield of corn planted on that date. Soybeans, you're still looking at the same. We can use references there to see that it is not time to quite worry yet. About May 25th is where we need to start really thinking about maybe changing the maturity of our hybrids, anything like that. But for now, I think everybody just needs to hold steady on their first May plans.
So say we get to that delayed planting point, and you mentioned potentially changing hybrids. What is offered from BEX that a farmer should be looking at if it comes to that point?
So if it comes to that point, if you are a BEX grower, it's an easy conversation to have with your seed advisor, your dealer. We have plenty of hybrids to choose from. If we are going to change maturities, I always like taking your highest maturity that you normally plant in your farm, and that's the one that you change out. So you'll maybe take that one from, let's say, 113-day down 5 maturity groups to 108-day, something like that. Anything in that nature, anything below that, you're good to go still. So one thing that's interesting about corn hybrids is that for every day that they're planted after May 1st, they naturally shorten themselves up about 7 growing degree units per day. So if we think about that, if we have a hybrid that has 2,700 growing degree units for black layer planted on May 25th instead of May 1st, is down to 2,525. So it shortened that day up quite a bit. Only in those really severe cases where it's May 25th, I'm not going to be able to plant now for another 2-3 days. That's where we really start thinking about switching our maturities.
And then, of course, replanting is a potential option as well for especially those farmers. You know, we looked at there were some really early periods of good weather where we could get that crop in the ground. Now we get to this point, weather's been not so favorable. So when we're looking at replanting from the farmer's perspective, what are some things that they need to think of when they're making that decision?
So when we're thinking about replant, we need to think of the potential of the crop that's in the ground right now compared to if we would to replant either by tearing up what we already have in there or interseeding within what we have. If we look at some of the studies we've done, we have it down to the percent that's in the field compared to planted on whether you should leave your stand and go with it for the end of the year for harvest or when it's time to replant. The good thing with the BEX is that we do offer free replant, so that's pretty easy to go about doing. Right now, looking at some of the early planted stuff, it's coming out of the ground very nicely, believe it or not. There is a little bit of difference in emergence, but nothing I'm concerned about. The stuff I am concerned about is anything that has been waterlogged, any of those low holes, some of those heavy flatlands that have been holding water now for 48 plus hours. I think we're going to see some replants in there. But for some of those people that are worried right now, as we look at the state of Iowa, we have about 8 to 12% of the corn that's actually emerged. So out of 50 plus percent that's been planted. So we need to look at how much is left to come up. So we still got to just be patient a little bit. Looking at the calendar date, there is still time. But knowing that if it comes to the case where you need to replant, Bex is able to provide the seed at no cost to you.
All right. And then before we wrap up, just tell us a little bit about what you've seen in Southwest Iowa as far as planting conditions are looking and, you know, progress in general.
So progress in general, I had a good conversation with all my seed advisors here. And we have people that are 100% done with everything to some people that haven't even turned a wheel yet. So I think it is across the board. It is all over the place on that. For the most part, people that got in early were very happy with their conditions. People that maybe waited were a little bit worried about cool temperatures, anything like that. I think they probably should have put a little bit more in the ground before that happened. Overall, we're off to a decent start. I've seen worse years, but I've also seen much better. But we have a lot of growing season left, so there's still a lot of hopeful people out there.
All right, Nate. And then for anyone who wants to get involved and get in touch and learn more from Bex Hybrids, how can they do that?
The best way to get any information from Bex is to visit their website, BexHybrids.com. From there, you should be able to find, you'll be able to find your local seed advisor, references to our PFR materials, or anything you might really need as it concerns Bex.
All right. Thanks so much for taking the time to visit today, Nate, and good luck as we enter the rest of the growing season.
All right. Thank you very much, Riley.
That again was Nate Meyer, Southwest Iowa field agronomist with Bex. And of course, we thank Bex for those agronomy reports and look forward to hearing more from them throughout the crop season. We'll have more Weekend Ag Matters next, so don't go too far yet. Dustin will be talking with Mac Marshall of the United Soybean Board. This is Weekend Ag Matters. May is National Beef Month, and with the warmer temperatures of the spring season, there's no better time to fire up the grill and enjoy some quality Iowa-raised beef. Just a 3-ounce serving of beef provides more than 10 essential nutrients like protein, iron, zinc, and vitamins B12 and B6, while only clocking in around 170 calories on average. Support your local Iowa beef producer by enjoying some nutrient-dense beef during this National Beef Month. This message brought to you by your friends at the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's your host, Dustin Hoffman.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. I'm Dustin Hoffman here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Had a chance to go out to Washington, D.C. a couple weeks ago and talk to some folks out there with different viewpoints on different commodity groups and different ag organizations. And here we have the chance to talk with Mac Marshall of the United Soybean Board to find out what's the latest in innovation. So great to have you on again.
It's a pleasure to be here, Dustin. Great to see you. And it's great to be back in D.C.
It is always a good time here. And, you know, obviously with D.C., a lot of things being looked at and talking a little bit about what's going on in the United Soybean Board. Of course, the soybean industry right now. I mean, there's a lot of things you guys are focused on.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the case every year. And I think that's one of the things that's exciting about agriculture. Every year is a new year. Every year is a new crop. And in soy, those new crops each year have more and more opportunities of where they're going to be used. I mean, that's what our farmers who serve on the board at United Soybean Board, that's what they're doing each year, is trying to set up the industry and the future of soybean farming in the best position possible. And that means research towards new innovations that you can help bring to market that can harness the power of soy and also showcase the value of soy, I think, to a greater and greater market, right? I mean, it's, you certainly have, you know, traditional uses, obviously food and soy being used in animal feed. Actually, we've got a bunch of these detailed here. You have your chickens and pigs, and, you know, animal ag is far and away our number one consumer here, but you've also got, you know, tractor similars in farming, but of course you can fill that tractor with biodiesel,
right,
or renewable diesel, clean burning from soybean oil, among other feedstocks. And, you know, then you've got your donuts here.
Of course, the important stuff.
Fried in high oleic soybean oil, of course. So it really is a magical bean. And those are just some of the very high-level uses. And, of course, the checkoff is not just a research checkoff. It's a research to promotion checkoff with a whole continuum, right? It's not just about researching things. It's about, you know, helping providing catalytic funding, bringing things to market, helping them succeed in the marketplace, and being able to, you know, report on it, being able to tell the story about it. And that's part of how these things, you know, ripple into the market. And I think the other important thing here, too, I mean, let's consider, there are roughly a half million soybean farmers in this country.
Right.
We got a population of 340 million people. We got fewer than 3.5 million people in this country who are farming. So about 1% of this population is actually involved in farming, according to the latest census of ag. So I think it becomes really, really critical to be able to talk about how the products of farming, and for us, you know, specifically soy, how soy shows up in the lives of everybody around us. Mm-hmm. You know, there's certainly food. That's a long-standing piece where soy has been used to nourish people for literally thousands of years through human use, and of course, animal ag as well. Mm-hmm. But newer innovations that have, you know, built upon previous blocks of innovation, that plays a role in creating a better future. Let's go back to the 90s. Back in the 1990s, soybean oil had an established market in the food space, but a bunch of forward-thinking farmers said, hey, there's more opportunities of things we can do with this oil. What about biodiesel?
Right.
Right? And so the biodiesel market eventually becomes viable, you know, it becomes commercially viable in the 2000s. It scales up from there. And then you've got this next wave of innovation and engineering and ingenuity that brings us renewable diesel, a drop-in fuel that's a replacement for petroleum-based diesel.
Mm-hmm.
Then that really gets you thinking, what are all the things that we make with petroleum that you can make with soy instead? So that's why I'm excited about things like soy-based plastics. I meant to bring some today, and so it's a mea culpa for me, but we have these soy-based straws, which, you know, will biodegrade, I believe, in 90 days. So, you know, really a nice sustainable solution for a product with, you know, if it's made through traditional plastic, you know, will not be sustainable. Well, you make it with soy, it's from the earth, back to the earth.
And, you know, that goes to all the things we talked about with earlier with Patrick, you know, the rubber in tires, the soles of your shoes, the treatment on the roads. We've been using soybean oil on gravel roads to cut down dust on farms for a long time. So, I mean, this every single thing that you guys come up with is another use for the farm to help drive demand, especially when we're looking at a situation right now where trade is not where we would hope it would be.
You know, it's an interesting environment as I look at the weekly export data and how that's evolved, you know, and you can see things like, you know, our whole soybean export pace this year is the slowest since during the trade war. And I think there's two ways to look at that, right? You can look at the downside of it, which is, okay, where are we with Chinese demand? We've seen, you know, Chinese purchases step back significantly, buying a lot of cheaper Brazilian beans right now. But let's look at the positive side of the story here. Why are we exporting fewer whole beans? Well, it's because now we're crushing a lot more domestically. And everything I talked about with renewable energy, that's driving a large chunk of demand for vegetable oils and fats, oils, and greases to use as feedstocks. And soybean oil is, on a volume basis and percentage basis, the most important feedstock used in domestic biomass-based diesel production. So as the market is searching for more and more of that to feed growth in renewable energy, well, you don't just get beans off the farm and then magically have renewable fuels.
Right.
You got all this intermediate stuff that has to happen. So you have to build crush. And this wave of crush plants that we're seeing, I believe 4 or 5 are coming online just in this calendar year alone. You don't crush for oil without also getting meal.
Right.
And so we might be crushing more beans here instead of exporting. But now, as we're producing more meal, we're exporting a lot more meal. And, you know, when you think about trade and you think about some of the pains that were lived through, you know, several years ago, it caused the soy industry and particularly our partners at USEC to really think differently about market diversification. And that's why when I think about diversification, you have geographic diversification, you've got channel diversification, you've got product diversification.
Okay.
So, you know, geographies. A couple of years ago, we set a volume record of whole soybean exports and, you know, total soy complex exports, but didn't hit a record in any one of our top 20 markets.
Okay.
That's interesting if you think about it. That means that some of these earlier stage markets, you know, have continued to see growth.
Okay.
If you look at soybean meal, you know, that's going to markets in Latin America and Southeast Asia where you have the demographics for growth. You have the income upside and opportunity for growth. You have the downstream animal agriculture and aquaculture coming online and growing. All of that is going to need more meal. And so, you know, we're seeing the system work. I think we're about 15% ahead of last year's pace on soybean meal exports. Okay. And last year was a record pace. So, you know, as we're crushing more, we're finding homes for it. And we're going to need to continue to do that, which is why USB is also invested towards expanding the Port of Grace Harbor in Western Washington State. It's a critical meal terminal, taking capacity up from 3 million tons to 6 million tons by early 2026. I've been out there a couple times. That's absolutely critical, because when we have, you know, shifts and greater efficiency in transportation, you know, that lowers the cost, that makes us more internationally competitive, and again, it also, you know, leads to a clearer point of delivery for farmers. You know, when you have, you know, crush plants located in places that hadn't existed before.
Yep.
And that means, you know, lower basis hit. And that's important. It all starts with farmer financial sustainability.
All right. Well, folks want to learn more about, farmers want to learn more about what the Soybean Checkoff is doing, what U.S. Soybean Board is doing to, you know, expand that use of soybeans. How do they do that?
Absolutely. You want to check out unitedsoybean.org as well as ussoy.org. We have all our social channels as well. If you follow me on LinkedIn as well as US Soy on LinkedIn, they're also on Instagram. We, you know, continually post a lot of content and updates about the innovations that are coming to market, as well as developments that are happening in the marketplace that are relevant for soy and soy farmers.
And that again was Mac Marshall of the United Soybean Board. And that brings us to the end of this week's show. You can find all our content online at iowaagnet.com. From the IARN studios in Des Moines, I'm Dustin Hoffman. For Mark Magnus and Riley Smith and Russ Parker, we thank you for listening. We'll see you next week on Weekend Ag Matters.